Somebody asked this question the other day when we were talking about Ashrei, and we mentioned that part of the chashivas of Ashrei is the fact that it's in the order of the Aleph Beis. So somebody asked, what happened to Nun? So the Gemara is going to take care of that now. Omar Rabbi Yechon, Mipnei ma loy nema Nun be'Ashrei. Why is there no pasuk beginning with Nun in Ashrei? And the Gemara answers, Mipnei sheyesh bo ma'paltan shel seine Yisrael. Because Nun is a pasuk that expresses the downfall of the Jewish people. Diksiv, as it says in the pasuk, Nafla loy soisiv kum besulas Yisrael. There's a pasuk in Amos. It says, she has fallen, the virgin of Yisrael has fallen and will no longer rise. So Nun actually represents the Nefila, the downfall of Klal Yisrael, as expressed in this pasuk. And therefore, David did not mention it in Ashrei. Now that's not the final word, but that's point number one. Now, this is a depressing pasuk. The Gemara here, if you want. This is a depressing pasuk. She has fallen and she will never rise. We're always told that ultimately we will be stood back up. So in Eretz Yisrael they explain the pasuk as follows. It's just an issue of where do you put the comma. Nafla velois soisif. She has fallen and she will no longer. Pasuk says she has fallen and she will no longer rise, the virgin of Yisrael. I say, 1 minute. Don't read she has fallen and she will no longer rise. Read it like this. She has fallen and she will no longer. Loitoisif limpaloi. She has fallen and she will no longer, in brackets, fall. Kum besulas Yisrael. Get arise, virgin of Yisrael. So we're rearranging the comma that changes the whole meaning of the pasuk. She has fallen and she will no longer. And therefore, rise, virgin of Yisrael.
Where do we place the
Yisrael? What's that? Under the Loisoisif. It said, Nafla Yisrael, which reads as, she has fallen and she will no longer rise, the virgin of Yisrael. So instead of reading, she has fallen and she will no longer rise, the virgin of Yisrael, we read, she has fallen and she will no longer. Now, rise, the virgin of Yisrael.
There's also a rabbi that was able to take show 150 reasons for something which is obviously Tomei, the star.
Yeah.
This is like a little bit of a stretch.
Is it? Who said to read the pasuk the first way?
Aren't things meant to be read first in a straightforward way?
Who said that straightforward?
But that's our Masorah. That's Tomei.
What's that?
That's our Masorah, but the Talmud.
So it's true. This is a drash. But now let's see it a step further now. So Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchok. Rav Nachman by Yitzchok said, oh, whatever the case is, it's okay. Even if you don't come on to this drash. Afilo hachi choza David v'samcha b'ruach ha-kodesh. David didn't skip the nun. He just put it into the proper perspective. We said that the Nun represents the downfall, the Nefila. David did mention it. Just he mentioned it in the next pasuk in the right perspective. Shenema, he shows in the next pasuk how Hashem actually supported us who fell. Soimech Hashem l'chol ha'naflim. Hashem supports all those who fell. What did you say? Yeah. So actually, David did not skip the Nun. The Nun is there. Not only the Nun is there, the Nefila is there. The downfall is there. Just that David put it into the right perspective.
Can he still call it an Aleph Beis?
What's that?
Can he still say it in the Seder Aleph Beis?
Okay. It's out of order. So let's see. So first of all, we'll just answer in a basic way. The Rabbeinu Tzadok explains as follows. Tzadok of Lublin. He says that he adds another point of the significance of the Aleph Beis that we didn't mention the other day. He said Aleph Beis, we have to realize that in most other languages the alphabet is just nothing more than building blocks. There's no inherent significance to the alphabet themselves. It's just in as much as they serve to form words. But in Lashon Kodesh, the Aleph Beis themselves have their own properties and are very, very significant. The order of the Aleph Beis is also very, very significant. Hashem created the world with the Aleph Beis. Hashem created the Torah with the Aleph Beis. The Aleph Beis are the root of all the powers and properties. They're the elements, right? You know, all existence in this world is comprised of the elements, basic scientific elements, right? So Aleph Beis is actually the elements, essentially, not just in writing. So he says the order of the Aleph Beis actually represent the true order of the way things are supposed to run. I have to get to the depth of the Aleph Beis, which would be a big mikubel. But the order of the Aleph Beis actually represents the way things are meant to run in this world. And therefore he says, for example, this is very interesting, he says that the the brachas in Bechukaisai, the blessings to the Jewish people, begin with Aleph and end with Tav. Aleph through Tav is completion, is perfection. In Bechukaisai Teleichu, that's how it begins. It ends with the word Kaimimius. That's the end of the brachas in Bechukaisai. Aleph through Tav. The klalas begin with Aleph, begin with Vav and end with Hey. It's not in the right order. Also the full Aleph Beis, but not in the right order. It's a klalas in Kisavai. They begin with Vav and then with Hey. So also they encompass all the Aleph Beis, but not in the right order, because that's not the way things are meant to be. That's a deviation from the way things are meant to be. So therefore he says as follows. He says Nun represents Nefila. It does represent Nefila, but that is not in and of itself one of the real steps in the order of the way the world is supposed to run. The whole purpose of the downfall is in order to rise up again. That's why it says, for example, in the Pasuk, Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'kam. Tzadik might fall seven times. Seven times represents material failure to its fullest. But he still rises up. And Mefarshim explained, it doesn't mean that even though he fell, he rose. Falling is part of the process of building him up. For Klal Yisrael, their downfall is part of bringing them to their perfection, part of perfecting them. And therefore, the whole purpose of the Nefila is in order to build us up. And therefore, it's the Olam Est. So we skip to the order of the Aleph Beis? The answer is no. It isn't right. It's not the right order to put Nun in and by itself as an independent building block. The whole concept of the Nun is merged with the Samach, with the Samach. And therefore, David HaMelech put it exactly in the right perspective. There is Nefila, but the Nefila goes hand in hand with the Samach, with the supporting, that Hashem will support the downfall. I'll take this a step further. Maral takes this a step further. He completely does away with any negative connotation of the Nefila. He says as follows. Nun is the middle letter of the Aleph Beis. Now, it's a good thing none of you have Sidurim in front of you with the Aleph Beis there, because if you were to check, you wouldn't find it to be. But he says that Aleph Beis include more than just Aleph through Tav. It also includes Mansepach, the end letters. The Mem, right? We know that there are five extra letters in the Aleph Beis.
Where are they positioned in this
fashion? So he says they're after the letters. You have the Mem, Nun, Tzadi, Pei, and Chav. They are all the end letters. So those are also letters. Then at the end, Nun ends up in the middle. So in the full Aleph Beis, Nun is exactly in the middle. So therefore he says as follows. He says, Nun is right in the middle, which means that it doesn't really have any counterpart. This is in a few senses. All numbers combine with another to reach 10, right? 10 is a unit of completion, right? 10 is... All numbers will combine with another to form 10, except 5. Right? It can only join with itself, which means that it doesn't have another number to join with. Joining with itself is not really another number. You just duplicated the 5. But 5 has no number to join with in order to form 10. Every other number can partner with another number in order to form 10. And, sorry, here we're talking actually towards hundreds, right? Every number every 10 can count, can join with another 10 to reach 100, except the 50. So the 50 stands alone. Let's make you some room.
You can
write
that destruction.
What's that? That's just a better idea.
Let's not waste it.
Okay.
What if we jump to tens?
Well, it is in the fives and in the tens. Right? In the fives it would be A. In the tens it's no.
What's the significant of ten?
What?
What's the significant of
ten? Ten is a complete unit. That's how we know, that's how it is practically in practical math, also in spirituality. Now, he says as follows, therefore, Nun, in this sense, represents the Jew. The Jew has nothing in the material world supporting it. Even more than that, the Jew really does not have material existence. This is a big concept, I'll mention it very soon, but based on the Avraham Avinu, right, the Avraham Avinu was told that the Avraham Avinu was told that the whole astrological configuration shows that there are no children for Avraham Avinu, right? Why? Because there really is no room for a Jewish people in the material world. The Jewish people are above it. We are directly supported by Hashem. There is not really room for us in the physical scheme of things.
There's room for Esau, right?
What's that?
There's room for Esau, then Aaron was the father of Esau as well.
What's that?
If there's room.
Esau wasn't really named as Zerah of Avram, right? It says, Be Yitzchok Yikor Lechot Zerah, and then Yitzchok Zerah was Yaakov. Esau is a different story. He was part of the impurities of Avraham Avinu.
So
let's leave that aside. What?
So who would be here if he won?
Nothing. But yet, we're not really a part of the physical world. We are spirituality living in the physical world. That's what we are. So now, I don't want to spend too much time on this point, but basically what the Maharal says is as follows. Therefore, that's what's being said here. The Nun can't stand on it. It doesn't have any support. It's just by itself. And therefore, he says, it's automatically in a situation of nefila, downfall. That's what the Jewish nation is. Except for the fact that Hashem supports it all the time. And therefore, the very essence of the Nun, there is no such thing as Nun without the Seimech Hashem. There's a few examples of this. You see this in a few different instances. Paray, when he saw the Jews, when he checked his own astrological perspective, saw the Jews heading into the desert, he said, "All I see is blood." Remember, when Moshe was ready to leave Mitzrayim, when Paray was almost ready to let them go, he asked them, "Who's going?" Moshe said, "We're all going." Paray said, "Ru'u kira neged p'neichem, there's evil facing you." Rashi says, he saw blood. There's no survival for the Jewish people. Maral says elsewhere that, what did he see? He saw the eagle. But that ended up really turning into Dam Mila. That was the blood that he saw. Maral says more than that. There's more depth there. Once the Jewish people accepted the Torah, they simply rose above what the physical world can accommodate. If we'll call it the radar of the physical world, they rose above it. Once they rose above it, all that showed up on the screen was splat. The reality of a Jewish people keeping the Torah shows up on the screen of this world just as a splat of blood. It can't be. The physical world doesn't support it. The truth is, you think about it a little bit, it really can't be. Could it be that there's an entire nation? Well, unfortunately today it's not the entire nation. But tell a guy out there that there's a whole nation of people who, no matter what their financial situation is, everybody dedicates at least 10% of their income to charity. Come on, can't really be. There's a lot of things that we live with on a regular basis that Gemara says, the Kohanim don't believe that we really keep Shabbos. All day long, nobody turns on a light, nobody turns any electricity, nobody drives a car. Can't be. There are a lot of things about our lifestyle that really can't be, as they are anyways. The Jewish behavior when it comes to tznius, morality, These are things that simply can't be in the real world. Can't be. And I've told him, a few times, I don't know if I told here, that one time I was with a Muslim taxi driver in New York. And we started talking about, we started schmoozing. And he said, our faiths have a lot of things in common. One of the things we have in common is, another one, I have relations with women, right? Other than your wife. He said, yeah, our relations don't let us have girlfriends. But he winked at me and he said, yeah, but we know how realistic, you know, in today's world. So I said, it was before I was married, I was a bacher, 19 years old. I said, I never touched a girl outside my immediate family. So he looked at me, wasn't even like in shock or anything, it was just like, come on, who are you kidding? 19 year old kid, never touched a girl. No such thing. He's right. He's right, there is no such thing, yet it is. The truth is that, yeah, the Jews don't, there isn't a place for the Jews, for the Torah, in the physical world. It's just that Semech Hashem v'chol ha'noiflim. The Jews, in essence, are something that can't have existence. They're noiflim. They're noiflim. Just Semech Hashem v'chol ha'noiflim. Hashem supports them. And therefore, the nun could only show up in the perspective of, in the context of Semech Hashem v'chol ha'noiflim. Hashem supports the noiflim.
The nun has no partner, but the hay also has no partner.
So the Maral points that out, Taka. He says that's true, but it's still different than the nun in the sense that the nun is the center letter. The hay doesn't have a partner in the first sense that we discussed, in as much as adding up to 10. But it does have a counterpart in the atbash system, which is, you know, everything has, this is the first, the second from the front, it's got a second from the back. Nun is right in the middle. Doesn't join with anything in any way. With the mansapach. Right, yeah. Right, 27, yeah. What's that? They said simply in this sense, that they have no counterpart at all, they have nothing supporting them. What's that? Nun, because Nun can't join with any other number to reach that full unit of 100, Nun has no counterpart among the other letters. Okay, so that's how the Maral puts this Gemara into a, what sounds like something of a depressing pasuk. The Maral puts into a very, very special perspective. Okay, let's move on. Omar Abi Elazar Bar Avina, Godol Ma Shenema B'Michoel. What's stated about Michoel, Malach Michoel is greater. Yoser Mima Shenema B'Gavriel. What's stated about Michoel is greater than what's stated about Gabriel. How's that? The Ilu b'Michoel k'siv, regarding Michoel it says, Vayo'of Eli Echad min asrafim. One of the srafim flew over to me. Now, Vayo'of flew over implies one motion, because we'll see in a moment that when a malach moves with more than one motion, that's actually expressed in the pasuk. Let's see. Vilu gabe Gavriel ksiv, regarding Gavriel it says, Va'ish Gavriel asher isi b'chazoin b'tchila. The man, Malach, Gavriel, that I saw originally in my vision, mu'af b'ya'af. He was flied with flying. Okay, however, we'll work that out in the English, but the point is that it is expressed as two motions. So, Michael gets where he needs to get in one motion, Gavriel gets where he needs to get in two motions.
There's a little quick note. It says that the point here, I have missions of mercy. So he goes without pause. I always thought that was
Raphael. Rafael was for the specific purpose of healing in that case of Rafael was sent for the specific purpose of healing Avram in that shlichus, but in a general way, as we'll see very soon, Michael is the malach that represents chesed, all of Hashem's kindliness. We'll see very soon. Michael is, again, I'm not all that familiar with the hierarchy among the malachim, but Michael is, in a sense, the greatest malach that exists. We'll see soon.
What's the root of Michael? What's Michael?
In this sense, I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with these subjects, but in a sense, that's why I stress, in a sense, as we'll see soon, what exactly he represents. I also don't know, maybe it's the same Malach, but I don't know. I also wondered that. I don't know. Let's see.
I know Rashi says stay briefless, but does Maya Miyav mean actually multiple or two?
Well, all it implies is he flew, he flew. So it's hard to really break it down more than that.
Clearly, literally,
two, right. Now, so then we're comparing Michal to Gavriel. Now the truth is, if you note, the previous pasuk didn't name Michal. It just said, well, Michal goes with one motion, because the pasuk says, one of the Shrafim flew to me. Didn't say Michal.
Isn't the one motion versus two motions the way we as human beings would think of it in the world of angels? The counting system of one versus two or whatever might not have the same meaning.
Well, we'll see. The truth is that here it really does mean in the way angels do things. It's just being expressed in the way we can relate to it. But we'll see soon what we can get out of this. Now, so again, the pasuk did not say that it was Michal. All the pasuk said is, one of the Srofim flew to me. So, my mashma da'echon Michalu, what indicates that one is Michal? So, Omar Rabbi Yechanan, Asya Echad Echad. No, when it says one of the Srofim flew to me, we derive that it's Michal through Gzera Shava. It says Echad in this pasuk, and it says Echad in another, linking the two together. How's that? Ksivach, in this pasuk it says, Vayo'of Elai Echad Min Asrofim. One of the Srofim flew to me. Oksiv Hasam, and it says elsewhere, V'hinei Michal Echad Hasorim Harishayim Balo Azraini. Michal, one of the foremost ministering angels, came to assist me. So we derive, it says one here, one there, linking the two together, indicating that it is the same Malach. Now Tana, Abraisa sums this up for us. Michal Ba'achas. Michal can do what he needs to do in one motion. Gavriel Mishtaim. Gavriel in two motions. Eliyahu Be'arba. Eliyahu in four motions. Malach HaMoves B'Shmoyne. Malach HaMoves, the angel of death, in eight motions. U'Bish'as HaMageifa. However, Malach HaMoves has two tracks that he works on. In a time of an epidemic, he has extra power. Be'achas. He can do his thing in one motion too. So what's going on here exactly? I mean, what are we supposed to make out of this? So certainly, I hope nobody's expecting me to really give a proper explanation of what's going on here. Not this Google, but just in a very basic way, just in a vague way even, I'd say, is that Michal is, number one, he is the Tsar of the Jewish people. The Jewish people also have a Tsar. That's why the Tsar that came to Yeshua to aid him in battle, that was Michal. He was also the angel that was offered to Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert. Remember, right after the sin of the eagle?
Yeshua? Sure?
Yeah.
The
Gilgal.
Was he one?
Yeah, but he was a nice the angel sent to assist them in war. And he was actually offered to Moshe back after the Chet HaEgel. Hashem said, I'll send the Malach with you. And Moshe said, no, Shkoyach. Send them back home. And Moshe was able to send the Malach back home. Yeshua already couldn't. But that was Michal. Michal. Moshe managed without. He also represents the Midah of Hashem's Midah of Chesed, which means that he really represents in the broadest way Hashem's primary Midah is Chesed. That's what the entire world is all about, and everything that Hashem's purpose in this world is just the Jewish people, and therefore Michal represents most directly and most closely Hashem's broadest picture, and therefore he's on the highest level, he's closest to Hashem, and therefore it takes much less on his part to achieve what he needs to achieve. What do I mean by less on his part? Let's say you want to buy a loaf of bread. So first of all, you have the thought, you want bread. There's a lot of stages that has to go through before you can actually do it. Then you have to figure out, it starts with the wish, then you have to figure out where you get bread. It's the next stage in the process. It might move very quickly in your mind, but there are stages in the process. You have to figure out where you get it. I'll call it next door. Then you have to actually start moving your body. You have to get up, you have to go to the makolet, you have to get the bread. There's a lot of stages until it actually happens. With Hashem, there are no stages. Hashem doesn't decide to do something and then do it. Hashem's decision makes it happen. That's basically what's being stated here about Michoel. Michoel is on such a spiritual level that basically it's just one shot. When he needs to do something, he conceives and it's done. Gavriel is our step further away. Gavriel is the Malach of Din. Din is a lower level than Chesed. Din, or not a lower level. It's just important to realize that this is also being brought out by our Gemara. Not to make the mistake of thinking that Chesed and Din are on two sides of the scale. Hashem runs the world with Chesed. Only with Chesed. Period. Din is a piece in the picture of Chesed. Sometimes you need din in order to make the chesed work. What you have balancing against the chesed, the Ramchal says, is rachamim and din balancing against each other. But they're all working together. Rachamim and din are balancing against each other in order to create the perfect picture of chesed. You need din in order to make the chesed work. If there wouldn't be punishment, Hashem's reward would be meaningless. So,
how does rachamim compare to chesed?
What's that? Rachamim is not the same thing as chesed. So we're saying that there's an umbrella mid called chesed. Contained in the mid of chesed is din and rachamim, which kind of counteract each other and work, if we'll say, so to speak, against each other. Yeah.
So chesed is made of equal parts of rachamim and din. Rachamim and din.
Yeah? Din and rachamim both work together to implement Hashem's chesed.
Like equal parts, like an equal balance, that's what
we're
saying. Chesed is made up of
50-50
balance.
I don't know. No, how the balance is, that will vary according to the situation, etc. Hashem will, sometimes there will be a need for more din, sometimes for more rachamim, but it's all for the purpose of chesed. That's what we're being told here. That's why Michal is the greatest and most encompassing malach. He's the malach of chesed. Contains it all. Gavriel is already a step further. It's din. Now, Eliyahu is, and therefore, by his nature, so to speak, he does is more than just one step before he can carry out what he wants to do. He's further removed from that direct connection to Hashem, and therefore there is, however it works with Malachim, the step of the planning and carrying out. Elio is a bit more, just because he's lower down. He's more of a physical angel, if we'll call it that, however that works. Malach HaMoves, we understand, he's even further removed. He has to go through a lot of bureaucracy before he can actually accomplish what he needs to accomplish. Okay, that's just in a very vague way.
Is there another idea which is very similar? Maybe like another level. These are all obviously sort of Hashem sleeping, right? So that we say that it's in one flight or whatever you say. So then is that the Kodesh Baruch is doling out Chesed, so it's like. Very easy, you know, like everybody's on the dole, like, you know, we're getting tested all the time, like all kinds of stuff. When it comes to din, you know, like the next level of Gevuros, so then it's like more, he's not going to just pass out din quite so easily. Like it's like has to go through a little more, like,
very good.
Bureaucracy.
Very good.
And I was just thinking, just like Eliyahu, sure. Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not true, but Eliyahu, I mean, maybe like Mashiach, something like that, and that process is even like more complicated.
That's interesting.
You know, and then,
okay.
Malcolm Mab is the person, you know, is going to actually to die, you know, to leave this world. So then you know, Hashem doesn't take that decision lightly at all. Except
very good.
So,
you're right on target. The who is it that says that? I don't remember who says that. Pshat? Possibly the Marsha. Oh, the Marsha. Who says that? Yeah, that is the pshat. Hashem makes it take longer, makes the process longer for those things that kiviyachol he wants it to be more room for retracting. So has to go through a lot more. Yeah, taking it back.
He has eight steps or stages of levels of bureaucracy, which is
that's right.
To use to give Hashem more time to read.
Pull it back. Yeah, yeah. Okay, it's interesting, by the way. That I'll just insert this. The Vilna Gaon says that the eight of the Malach HaMavis actually represents a different concept. He says there are eight causes of death in the world. Eight causes of death. The sin of Adam HaRishon. And he says that there are seven categories of sin that all sins fall under, which are lemaisa the causes of all death. The seven that he lists are taiva, which means desire. This does not mean physical lust. That's later on the list. I guess it just means more like greed. Kina is jealousy. Gaiva, arrogance, you know, pride. Kilos is stinginess, when you can't bear to see somebody else have something. It's not the same as kina. Kina, jealousy, is when you feel that whatever the other person has, you should have. Kilos is just that when you can't, what?
Can't fargin.
Oh, exactly, you can't fargin. I don't want the other person to have it. Why? You're not going to have it anyways. Yeah, but he shouldn't. So, that's... Then there's nos, that's more of the direct physical lust. Sinas habrias, you're just not liking people. And batala. Batala, you're just sitting around and not doing anything. Idleness. So those are the seven causes of sin, along with the chet of Adam HaRishon, and those are the seven. Those are the eight causes of death altogether. The Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, yeah. And he also notes that there are actually seven penalties in the Torah. Right, there are the four death penalties. And then there's Misa Bedi Shemayim, Karas, and Malkus.
Zunus is a sin in of itself, or that batala, you're grouping batala together with
you. Right. So he says Zunus says in just the general category of physical lust. Not Zunus per se. Okay.
The seven that you quoted are more earthly.
Right.
And Adam HaRishon
was more abstract.
Right.
Yes. Ah, you're noting that with the general concept of aping lamala. Interesting insight. Good. Okay. We move on. I'm going to be Yeshua ben Levi. Hafalpi shekora adam kriya shema bebeis hakneses. Even though a person already said kriya shema in shul, then your kriya shema of Meiriv. Mitzvah likroisei al mitosei. It's a mitzvah to say it again in bed. Is the famous concept of Kriya Shema. We've been familiar with this before we became familiar with the Meir of Kriya Shema, right? Omar Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi says, my kro, what is the source for this? Rigzu ve'al techeto. Excite yourself and don't sin. Imru bilvavchem, say bilvavchem, meaning say the pasuk that talks about levavchem. What's that? Al levavecho, Shema. Al mishkavchem talks about, say also the parsha that talks about mishkavchem, v'shoch b'cho. V'day musela, then you can be quiet, you can go to sleep. Now, Omer of Nachman. Nachman says, "In Talmud Chacham hu ein tzarich." Person is a Talmud Chacham, doesn't need to do this. He can skip it. Why? Because the purpose of this is the person should go to sleep from within Torah learning. That's the idea. That's why you go to sleep. Shema is Torah. You go to sleep in Torah. If a person is a Talmud Chacham, Rashi says, "What's a Talmud Chacham doing? He's all the time, anyways. He has his learning going through his mind." So he's naturally going to be learning when he's going to sleep. So therefore, he doesn't have to.
Is there a shmira in
coming up. Good. So Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, that's true.
What's the shmira?
What's that? Protection. Let's see. So Amar Abaye. So Abaye said, you're right, that as far as the precept of going to sleep in Torah goes, Talmud Chacham is already covered. But there's another element, what you just mentioned. There's an element of shmira, of protection. The person goes to sleep at night, he needs protection. So he says, Av Talmud Chacham boi le lemeimach ad psuke de rachame. Even a Talmud Chacham, even though he doesn't need the Torah aspect, he needs the protection aspect. And therefore, he also should say a pasuk that discusses Hashem's divine mercy, kegain, such as, Biyadcha afkin ruchi, padiso isi Hashem ke'elemes, I entrust my spirit into your hands, because I know that you'll redeem me, the truthful Hashem.
Also, the Talmud Chacham, as well as the regular person, they both are going to potentially come into contact with Ruach Ra during the night time. And it doesn't, the Talmud Chacham is not necessarily different from the regular person in that regard. It just, it comes. So
right.
Therefore,
he also.
Equal.
Right. Therefore, he also has to have that protection. That's right. So therefore, yes, he definitely needs the Shmira too. So if so, saying that there are two elements to Kriya Shema L'Amidah. There's the Torah aspect. A person should go to sleep having learned Torah. Maybe go to sleep in Torah. And there's the Shmira aspect.
Can we apply the Shmira to Talmud Chacham also?
What?
Even
on the one hand. But on the other hand, the Chazal also say that the concern here at night time is mazikin, whatever that is, mazikin, shadim, forces that are busy at night. And the Gemara actually says that these forces are more interested in harming Talmidei Chacham than regular people, and therefore lists there are four people who especially need shmir at night. Among them is a chasim, a sick person, I forgot who the third is, but the fourth is the Talmud Chacham. Yeah. So therefore, yes, the Talmud Chacham definitely needs this shmira as well. Okay.
What's the issue with the going to sleep with the Torah? And is the shmira just saying, it's important to have shmira in the light, but besides the shmira, the mind after the moment before you're going to sleep is important to have Torah as opposed to, I don't know,
So the truth is that sleeping, there's a couple of dangers in sleeping. First of all, as we said, there's this spiritual danger of the mazikin, etc. Besides that, there's another danger. We ourselves are dangerous when we go to sleep, because bedtime is a time that's conducive for sins. Specifically, right? The sin of causing yourself emissions, which is given a lot of attention. The place given, and a lot of the Kriya Shema is actually aimed towards that. And therefore, you need the Shmira. In this sense, the Torah is actually meant to protect you from this as well. You need the double Shmira. Shmira against the Shadim, okay, fine. You need the Chus of the Torah in order to protect you from that sin.
Bolster self control.
What's that?
Bolster self control.
Contributes. The person still has to contribute his own efforts, but it contributes.
In Kriya Shema we mentioned Yehorim.
Right. That's part. Right. You see, that's part of the theme of the whole Seder of Kriya Shema. We're going to see soon a little more allusions to this, but the Mefarshim and the Poskim actually go to length showing how, number one, Kriya Shema provides a certain measure of protection against it. Again, you have to inspire yourself too. There are no free rides. And also that Kriya Shema actually can be mitaken for previous such sins. So that's one reason why we specifically need the going to sleep in Torah per se. When you're approaching sleep, part of the idea is you want to approach it with trepidation. you're getting into a dangerous area. Right? By going, by lying down in bed with nothing to do, is a dangerous position for a person to be in. Even forgetting a mazik, and just as far as a person himself being a mazik. Now the Maharal adds another twist to this, which Rav Shimshon Pinkus very much stresses, that we mentioned this idea a few times. Sleeping, we don't want sleeping to be a vacuum. We want sleeping to be counted as a part of our service of Hashem. Right? Shame to waste 6 to 8 hours in a day when we could be earning Torah and mitzvahs. By going to sleep in Torah learning, you are designating your sleep, putting it into the framework of your service of Hashem too. And therefore, actually, the Poskim say, right, this is both halacha, it's an halacha of Kriyas Shema Lamita, that if you don't fall asleep right away, you should repeat it again. Keep repeating it until you fall asleep, mamish, from within that recital of the Psukim of Kriyas Shema. Ah, okay, so we have to bring Hamapil into the picture. Okay, so first of all, okay, so Nechemiah is asking, what about Hamapil? So Lamaisa, bottom line, the answer to your question is yes. Even after Hamapil, you can continue repeating the Pesukim. But the truth is, we have to step back for a minute and discuss how Hamapil fits in with this whole business.
But then also all the other Pesukim, I mean, when you're saying Krishna, we're just talking about Shema and the Avodah itself, right? We're not talking about all the Pesukim and Nilam and everything else that you say afterwards, right? Or is that considered to be the part of the Seder of Krishna?
So what the Gemara doesn't mention here, the Gemara mentions elsewhere. In Shavuos, the Gemara mentions saying Vinaya, and you go to sleep, and a few other prokim. And the Gemara itself mentions a few additional things that should be stated, that should be said when going to sleep, which is not here. And there the Gemara doesn't mention Kriyas Shema. The Shulchan Aruch puts it all together in Siman Reish Lamed Tes. The Shulchan Aruch gives you the whole list of things that need to be said, which basically reflects what you have in your Siddur as Kriyas Shema Lamita. Okay, now as far as Hamapil is a separate concept. Hamapil is a bracha on going to sleep. Now, the psukim that you're saying for Shmira are actually a part of the process of going to sleep, and therefore they don't constitute a hefsek between Hamapil and going to sleep. But we do. The truth is, we do have to step back for a minute and just analyze the whole nature of Hamapil, Kriyas Shema, and how it all works. Because there's a lot of halachic implications to this. There is a bracha of Hamapil. What is Hamapil exactly? Is Hamapil a bracha on going to sleep? Like you say before you eat food? Before you eat food, you say Amoitzi, right? You have to eat your food immediately. Hamapil is a bracha on going to sleep. If so, that would really mean that you should wait until you're sleeping. You don't want to have a hefzik, right? So you wait until you sleep, until you're sure you're going to fall asleep right away, right? And if you said Hamapil and Chas V'Shalom, you're not asleep within 10 seconds, you have to start yelling, no. So the Chaya Odom says that Hamapil is not quite a bracha on going to sleep in the sense of a bracha on food. It's not quite that. It's more of a general shvach on the concept of going to sleep in a conceptual way. We don't really have to worry about hefsekim to such an extent. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't like that. He does tend towards saying that no, it actually is a bracha on going to sleep, and therefore if a person isn't sure he's going to fall asleep, he should not say Hamapil. Now, if you said Hamapil, you're not falling asleep right away, okay, what can you do? But the Mishnah Berurah's conclusion is that you should treat Hamapil mamish as a bracha on going to sleep, and therefore it should be the last thing you say after all the other Mizmorim, etc., etc. Yet if you're not falling asleep right away, you can still repeat the other Mizmorim, because that's part of the process of going to sleep. It's like the same as talking about the food after making a bracha. The truth is that in general it's a machloikis whether Hamapil should be said before Kriyas Shema and the other psukim or afterwards. There's a lot of discussion about that. It's interesting, the way the Shulchan Aruch seems to set it up is that you say Shema, then you say Hamapil, and then you say the Mizmorim, and then you say the other Prakim of Tehillim. You won't find it set up that way in most Sidurim. Most Sidurim will either have Hamapil first and then all the Psukim, or they'll have all the Psukim and then Hamapil at the end. The reason the Shulchan Aruch set it up that way, and it's interesting, we already mentioned that Shema and these other Psukim might be two completely different concepts. Shema is learning Torah, the other Psukim are Shmira. Shmira is mamish part of going to sleep. So therefore you say Shema first, then you say I'm happy, I'm going to sleep. You say another psukim is beginning the process of going to sleep, and therefore that's how the Shulchan Aruch set it up. But Lamai says the Mishabura ends up concluding that no, the best way to do it is to say I'm happy at the end if you say all the other psukim. Yet he says if you figure you might fall asleep in the process, say I'm happy first. So that's how what we can consider for ourselves the bottom line. The bottom line is, if you're confident that you're going to wait, be awake until the end, say I'm up all the way at the end. If you suspect that you might fall asleep in the middle, say I'm up first, and then begin the process, say as much as you can until you actually fall asleep. So that's bottom line.
Maybe another thought, and that is, I see it. I mean, I'm up is sober in the sense that what it talks about, you touch upon the fact that you may not wake up. So, rather start with that to get your head straight, sober, so to speak, to understand that 1/60th
of sleep is
dead, and get that out of the way, so to speak, with all due respect, because that's very sobering, and then end up with Torah.
That's an interesting thought.
Which is a little sweeter and perhaps a bit more lulling. To be able to fall asleep.
Interesting thought.
So
I hear that. Okay, a couple of other points. Just very briefly, there's also a question in the poskim, how much of Shema are you supposed to say when you go to sleep? Really, all you have to say when you go to sleep is Shema and Vahavta. Yet the poskim, there are poskim that recommend, Rabbeinu Chananel is the origin for this, and the Mishnah Berurah cites it as a recommended thing to actually say the whole thing, because you have the famous concept that Kriya Shema contains 248 letters corresponding to the 248 limbs of the body, and it provides you with protection for all 248 limbs of the body. Another interesting point mentioned by the poskim is, and that we'll basically finish with that, is there's also a mini concept of Kriya Shema La'imita when you go to sleep during the day. The poskim recommend saying Vihi Noyam even when you go to sleep during the day. Not any other elements of Shema, but Vihi Noyam the poskim recommend when you go to sleep during the day. I said that was the last point, but not the last point is that another thing recommended by the poskim is Vidui before going to sleep to review your day and see if there's anything that needs to be rectified and do so. All right, that'll be that for tonight.